Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise, its five-year mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to find a new joke for the Russ Abbott show, and to boldly go where no man has gone before, the north face of Claire Rayner. Captain's Albert, Stardate 4561.4. Our mission? To escort the Medusan ambassador to Federation headquarters. A dangerous mission indeed, because anyone who looks into the eyes of a Medusan is immediately smitten with total and absolute madness. In fact, I have it on very good authority that the warm-up man for The Price is Right is a Medusan. At the moment, we are... Mr. Spock? Has someone just seen the Medusan ambassador?
No, the Medusan ambassador has just seen The Price is Right.
On our way to Federation headquarters, we broke off our journey to investigate a disturbance on the planet of Grygon, a dark, eerie, mysterious planet on which we encountered danger, horror, terror, and a man with an accordion. All right, Mr. Accordion Man, that's enough.
Oh, but Captain Kirk, he's learning me how to play the accordion.
Oh, very well, Uhura. You may proceed, Mr. Accordion Man.
Okay, well, you do it like this, you see, Uhura. You hold it just under your chin, close to your body, yeah? With your arms like this, and you simply squeeze in and out.
Like this, you mean?
Not bad. Hey, now try it with the accordion.
On this mission, we also plan to call in at our mother planet Earth to try to discover why our missions are persistently interrupted by a radio program. In an effort to pinpoint the exact program in question, Spock has taken action.
That's right, Jim. All yesterday, I perused a current copy of the Radio Times.
And the result of your perusal of the Radio Times, Mr. Spock?
I've ordered one of those greenhouses they're advertising on page 63.
Spock.
Yes?
Don't be such a prat.
I also learned that the show in question goes by the illogical name of Star Turk 2.
Excellent, Spock. I'll just Albert that in my Captain's Albert. Excuse me, would you mind turning your arm around the other way, Captain Zlog?
What?
This side of your arm is full, so I want to write on the other side.
Captain Kirk, I really don't think it's a good idea writing your reports on my body.
Why not?
Well, I mean, the other day you included my love tattoo when you were dictating that list of Scotty's engineering requirements to Federation headquarters.
Your love tattoo?
Yeah, I have the word love tattooed on my arm. And you included it in the message by mistake. Instead of ordering 10 simulators like you should have, you ordered 10 love simulators.
So that's why Scotty's been walking about with a permanent grin on his face. Mr. Scott!
I suspected something like this, Jim, because for the past few days I have noticed Scotty displaying symptoms which I took to be delirium tremens.
Hey, what is it, Captain?
Scotty, you've stopped.
What do you mean, Mr. Spock?
You have stopped shaking, Mr. Scott.
Hey, well, it was affecting my eyesight, and... And anyway, now we've got the love simulators. I don't have to bother.
About the love simulators, Mr. Scott. How do they work, exactly?
Well, there's one here, sir. As you can see, it's a rectangular box large enough to take a human being. And when you lie in it, immediate and extremely pleasurable sexual fulfillment is yours.
I see. Well, in I go, then.
Yes. Oh, yes. What a truly erotic experience. It's uncanny. It is exactly as if I were with a woman.
You are. Uhura is in there.
Sorry, my apologies, Lieutenant Uhura.
You're welcome, Captain Kirk.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Ah, Captain Kirk, we are now directly over Broadcasting House.
Thank you, Mr. Sulu. We will now go to Broadcasting House, there to lodge a formal complaint.
Very well, Jim.
Right, stand by, Mr. Spock, Uhura, Captain Zlog. Beam us all down, Scotty.
Aye, aye, sir.
Not into the love simulator, you pillock.
Sorry, sir. Right, here you go, then. I'll beam you down to Studio 2.
So this is a BBC radio studio.
And the studio from which Derek Jameson does his show, I believe, Jim.
Listen, what's that rumbling sound?
That's Lord Reith turning in his grave. Observe, Jim. Over there, a program is in progress.
Hi there.
Don't touch me.
What?
I said, don't touch me. If there's one thing I can't stand, it's men touching me.
But I haven't.
No, but you were going to touch me. You were going to touch me, weren't you? I know that look.
Well, what look?
Well, the look that says you're going to touch me.
I just smiled.
Well, of course you smiled. You smiled because you knew you were going to touch me. Well, you can just forget it. I can do without you touching me, thank you very much.
Oh, I've no intention of touching you.
Then why did you say hi there to me?
Well, I saw you standing on your own and thought you might like to chat. No, really, I'd just like to chat.
Well, just as long as it is only a chat, because if there's one thing I can't stand, it's men touching me. As long as it's understood that our relationship will be a non-touching one.
Well, suits me fine. Look, your glass is empty. Let me get you another drink.
Don't touch me!
Oh, no, I only offered to get your glass filled.
Yes, but why? So that you can touch me, because that's what would happen when you took my glass off me, wouldn't it?
Well, I might accidentally touch you, I suppose.
You suppose?
But even if I did, it'd only be your fingers that I'd touch, wouldn't
it? Yes, first the fingers, then my hand, then my arm, knee, thigh. I know you men.
You must be mad.
Me? You're the one who's trying to touch a woman who you've never even met before.
All right, then. I won't get your glass filled.
You're right, you won't.
Nice party.
Yes.
My name's Sir Barry Woodhouse, by the way.
You bastard.
What?
Don't what me, you devious pervert. You think I don't know why you told me your name? You think I don't know that you know if you tell me your name, I'll tell you my name, and then you'll offer me your hand, and I'll have to offer you mine, and then you will touch me? Well, I do not want to be touched.
I wasn't going to offer me hand.
Well, I know better.
I wasn't. But even if I was, you couldn't have known that.
I know what I know.
Well, you don't know that. I mean, how can you possibly know what's going on in my mind?
How could anybody not know what's going on in the mind of the sort of man who goes around touching women?
I do not go around touching women.
Yes, well, that's your story.
It's not a story. I am a respectable man who does not, repeat, not go around touching women. Not now, not in the past, not in the future, not ever. Now, do I make myself clear?
Well, there's no need to be so touchy about it.
You have been listening to part two of It Happened One Night by A. Wall. That is, of course, It Happened One Night by the writer A. Wall, not a play entitled It Happened One Night by a Wall. Now, I hope you didn't think I meant It Happened One Night by a Wall. But even if you did, I didn't say what it was that happened by the wall, did I? Oh, sorry, I'm new to announcing, you see. I just wanted to make it clear that A. Wall is the writer of the play and not something that happened against by one night, and certainly not sex. I'm sorry. And now it's time for news from the zoos. And this week our show comes from the Paradise Zoo, Essex. The sex in the word Essex has nothing to do with that noisy, grunty, under-the-sheets thing that... sorry.
With me at the very beautiful and aptly named Paradise Zoo is the head curator, John Golightly. John, I gather that since taking up your position, you've introduced some rather revolutionary ideas in the care of wild animals.
Oh, yes, that's right. You see, most, if not all, other zoos group their animals by zoological type. For example, they put all the snakes and lizards in the reptile house, all the elephants and rhinos in the pachyderm house, etc., etc. However, here at Paradise Zoo, we've introduced the idea of grouping animals by habitat. For instance, take our Australian enclosure with the kangaroos, wallabies, bush babies and such like.
And the idea is a success?
Well, yes and no. Take our Plains of Africa habitat over there, where we've had very mixed results. For example, the wildebeest have been a big disappointment. Yes. We had no luck with them at all, none whatsoever. In fact, we've had to entirely restock the habitat with wildebeest four times in the last 6 weeks. On the other hand, the lions are thriving.
The lions?
Yes, thriving, absolutely thriving. You might not believe this, but we only started with two. Shere Khan and Goebbels. That's Goebbels over there, see?
Where?
Well, over there. See, by that pile of wildebeest bones. They're very partial to wildebeest lions, you know, yes. I have tried them on other things, joints of horse meat and such like, but they seem to prefer their food on the hoof, as it were. Well, not that it actually stays on the hoof all that long. Because the lion is a truly savage beast at the best of times. I think it must be the hunter in them coming out, you see. Well, it is in the nature of a lion to hunt.
Yeah, I know it is, that they hunt wildebeest.
Oh, and very successfully, too, if our experience here at Paradise Zoo is anything to go by. Very successfully. Shall I tell you something? It's interesting. It's the wildebeest is a really thick animal. They just do not seem to learn. I mean, you'd think that if you were a wildebeest and you saw your fellow wildebeest being chewed by a lion, well, you'd say to yourself, ho, ho, that wildebeest is being eaten alive by a lion, and I'm a wildebeest, so it will behove me to steer clear of lions. So in future, if I see a lion, I'm going to hide. Yet not once have I seen a wildebeest trying to hide from a lion.
Yes, well, hiding can't be all that easy, can it? After all, the entire paddock is only about 100 yards square.
Oh, that's 10,000 square yards, quite a big area.
Not when there's about 300 lions in it.
Yes, the lions have been very successful, as I mentioned. Now, if you... Oh, look, you're in luck, you see. There's half a dozen of my keepers, and they're leading a new wildebeest into the paddock.
They're not leading it, they're dragging it.
Yes, we've found that wildebeest are sometimes a bit reluctant to enter the plains of Africa, Paddock. Hence the blindfold over the eyes of the wildebeest and the trail of manure behind it. But I assure you it will be all right when it's settled in. For a time.
Maybe you'd like to see our Brazilian basin paddock. Lots of snakes, very few rodents.
Miss Dobbs, kindly switch off that radio and attend to this customer if you don't mind.
Now then, what can I do for you?
I'd like to buy a diary, please.
Of course, and what kind of diary do you have in mind?
Well, just an ordinary one will do.
Oh, we do a very nice golfer's diary. Or how about our cookery diary, which features a different recipe for every day of the year?
No, just an ordinary diary will do, thank you.
Well, maybe you'd like our gardener's diary, or the swimmer's diary, or the schizophrenic's diary. Gives you the dates of both Christmases, both Easters.
No, that's just an ordinary diary, please.
You see, we stock so many different kinds of diaries.
Do you stock an ordinary one?
We stock diaries for doctors, nurses, stewards, pursers, soldiers, sailors, fishermen, whalers, Russians, Prussians, Scotsmen, yachtsmen, bakers, breakers, Quakers, shakers, genealogists, gynecologists, physiologists, escapologists.
Now, I just want to know...
Mathematicians, failed physicians, Seventh-day Adventists, struck-off dentists, harriers, farriers, herpes, carriers, fathers, mothers, incestuous lawyers, sawyers, washing line voyeurs, deans, queens, blimps, wimps, pimps, chimps, and diaries on darts, carts, hearts, marts, parts, tarts, and farts.
Please. Just an ordinary diary, please.
Men of letters, bedwetters, wife molesters, condom testers, vegetarians, octogenarians, superbly endowed Rastafarians, gypsies, nomads and sundry drifters, crude Australian shirty lifters.
Excuse me, could you tell me where the TV and video department is?
Just over there to your right, see?
Oh, thanks.
Accordionists, contortionists, backstreet abortionists, navigators, aviators, men who assemble big vibrators, mamas...
Excuse me, I'm interested in buying a television and video recorder.
Of course, sir. How about this combination here?
Oh, no, you don't. I present the 17th minute of the show. A few weeks ago, our guest was Mr. Arthur Scargill, who read the story of the Three Bears. To read that same story tonight, in the interests of political balance, is the Right Honourable Mrs. Margaret Thatcher. Ladies and gentlemen, Mrs. Thatcher!
Thank you. No, please. You needn't bother to kneel. As Glynis Kinnock often says to her husband. You get it? You needn't bother to kneel. Right. Now, once upon a time, there were three prosperous, contented bears. Father conservative bear, mother conservative bear, and young conservative bear. And they all lived together in a very comfortable, four-bedroom, semi-detached, centrally heated, double-glazed, pretty, blue-painted house in the woods. And the house was owned by the bears, because as responsible citizens, they subscribed to the principle of home ownership for all and believed firmly in standing on their own 2 feet and not relying on state handouts like rent and rate subsidies or any other left-wing namby-pamby concessions to the work-shy. Now, one day, when the bears were out buying shares in British nuclear waste, a socialist party leader by the name of Baldilocks, on his way through the woods, when he chanced to see the house of the three conservative bears, and he said to himself, "My, what an extremely attractive house, well-built, well-looked after, and paid for. In other words, ideal for nationalisation." But Baldilocks couldn't get into the house to nationalise it, and this made him very cross. And he banged on the door and said, "If you don't let me in, I'll huff and I'll puff just like I do in the House of Commons, and I'll blow your house down." And then he forced open a bedroom window and got into the house of the three conservative bears. Tired from his exertions, he decided to take a nap. Now, he tried Father Conservative Bear's bed, but that was too lumpy, so he immediately got into it, which quite frankly doesn't surprise me one little bit, because that's the sort of perverse, pig-headed thing that socialists do, just so they'll have something to complain about. I mean, all that Baldilocks had to do if the mattress was too lumpy was simply give it a shake, just like I'd like to shake him sometimes by the throat, him and his socialist, Marxist, Trotskyist, Leninist, militant, pig-dog, loony left friends who all voted Conservative at the next election and lived happily ever afterwards. Thank you.
Mrs. Margaret Thatcher, ladies and gentlemen, probably the best teller of fairy stories this country has ever known. And now it's back to the TV and video department.
I'll just switch the television on for you, shall I, sir, and demonstrate the very high-definition picture quality.
Even as I speak to you from the BBC Television Centre here in London, Shepherd's Bush...
Oh, push off, Wogan. We'll try BBC Two, shall we?
Ready to begin the operation, Hawkeye?
Ready as I'll ever be, BJ. Let battle commence. Scalpel?
Scalpel.
Swab?
Swab.
Scissors?
Scissors.
Witty one-liner?
Witty one-liner.
Thank you, scriptwriter. Say, look at this poor guy's kidneys. The last time I saw kidneys chopped up so much, they were in Provençal sauce.
How are you going to tackle the job, Hawkeye?
Well, I think first off we'll try a feed and a smart-ass reply.
One feed, one smart-ass reply.
Do you think you'll be able to save the guy, Hawk?
Save him? I'm a surgeon, not an evangelist.
Maybe try a straightforward army leadership indecision gag.
Yeah, we'll do that.
One army indecision gag.
The top brass didn't know whether to decorate this poor guy or have him executed. So they gave him a purple heart attack.
Let's try a cry from the heart followed by a funny play on words.
Whatever you say, BJ.
Cry from the heart, play on words.
It's times like this I wish I'd listen to my father and become an accountant.
It's times like this I wish I'd listen to my accountant and become a conscientious objector.
He's thinking fast, Hawkeye. His pulse is...
All right, look, quick, give me a flippant remark.
One flippant remark.
He's thinking fast, Hawkeye. His pulse is reading negative.
Personally, I prefer reading Hemingway, but everyone to his taste.
Too late. He's a goner.
Really? I thought he was a Mormon.
You did your best, Hawkeye.
Sometimes your best just isn't good enough.
What do you mean? 7 gags and we're only 2 minutes into the show. That's pretty good going, I'd say. Hey, you guys, how about a cocktail?
Great, yeah, great.
Well, there was this bishop and this call girl, and
oh,
they met
really?
In a bar.
Oh, hey, I was enjoying that.
I thought I'd just demonstrate the video recorder, sir.
Oh, go on, then.
Well, this is a quiz show recorded using this TV and video. And this is Barty Bell welcoming you all once again to Ring My Bell. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And could we please have our first contestant who wants to play Ring My Bell? And you are, sir?
My name's Harry Butterball, Barty.
And what do you do for a living, Harry?
I'm a quantity surveyor.
A quantity surveyor. Are you married or single?
I'm married.
Married, yes. Any children?
Two boys.
Two boys. And how old are they?
4 and 6.
4 and 6. Now, what are your hobbies?
Well, I like to watch football.
Football? And why am I repeating every answer you give me before I ask you another question?
Because you're a TV quiz host, and that's what they all do.
Because I'm a TV quiz host, and that's what they all do. Well, Harry, it's been lovely talking to you, but now it's time to play Ring My Bell. So, tell me, Harry, do you think you're going to be able to ring my bell and win yourself £5,000?
Oh, I'm certainly going to have a good try, Barty.
That's my man. And, well, here is all you have to do to win that splendid prize. 10 yards away from you, Harry, 10 yards away from you, suspended exactly 7 feet above the studio floor, is my large cast-iron bell. Now, all you have to do, Harry, is to make your way over there to my bell, stand underneath it, jump up in the air, strike my bell with your head, and you will have won Ring My Bell! But, Harry, it isn't going to be quite as easy as that.
I didn't think it would be, Barty.
And you're right, Harry. Because between you and my bell, trying to stop you from getting to my bell and ringing it will be... Well, what do you think we've got between you and my bell this week, Harry?
Oh, let's see. A rabid dog?
No, not a rabid dog, Harry.
A hungry wolf?
No, not a hungry wolf, Harry.
It's not a king cobra again, is it?
No, it's not a king cobra, Harry. Do you give up?
Yeah, I give up.
Okay, between you and my bell, Harry, trying to stop you ringing it will be a police marksman.
A police marksman?
That's what I said, Harry.
A police marksman. Whatever will you think of next?
A starving lion with piles, but... Yes, but that's next week. All you have to cope with this week, Harry, is the police marksman, who, as you see, is now taking a position midway between you and my bell. So, well, Harry, do you think you're going to be able to get past that police marksman and ring my bell?
Well, I'm going to give it my best shot, Barty.
And so is the police marksman. So, if you're ready, Harry.
Ready.
Then, Mr. Harry Butterball, ring my bell. Harry, I'm afraid that you failed to ring my bell.
He got me in the leg, Barty.
Yes, he did indeed, Harry. But, look, all is not lost. If you wish to save your leg, Harry, if you want the Ring My Bell show to rush you to a nearby hospital where at this very moment a dedicated team of surgeons are waiting to operate on your leg, all you have to do is look at the clip of film which will come up on this TV monitor and spot the deliberate mistake. Are you ready, Harry?
Ready.
Here he comes now.
Mr. Jenkins, come in, do. Please take a seat.
Morning, Doctor. Have the results of my tests come through yet?
Indeed they have, Mr. Jenkins, and you'll be happy to know that they've pinpointed your problem.
About time, too.
Yes, you're pregnant.
Oh. Oh, what?
Pregnant. May I be the first to offer my congratulations?
I'm pregnant?
That's right. Will this be your first, or have you had other babies?
Of course I haven't had any other babies.
Well, in that case, I recommend a hospital confinement. I believe that St. Thomas's is very good.
Doctor, this is Mr. Jenkins you're talking to.
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins, I've been seeing you about my suspected gout.
Well, you'd rather have a baby than have gout, surely. Particularly as it's your firstborn. Now, about the confinement...
Dr. Fletcher, I'm not having a baby.
But the tests are absolutely conclusive.
Look, Doctor, it's impossible for me to be pregnant.
Ah, you mean you were wearing a condom? Well, they aren't 100% certain, you know. Now, I want you to take 2 of these pills 3 times a day.
What are these for?
Well, they're to stop you feeling sick first thing in the morning.
I never feel sick first thing in the morning.
Well, you've never been pregnant before, have you?
But the last time I am not pregnant.
Look, Mr. Jenkins, ignoring your condition isn't going to make the problems go away, you know. Well, what's the problem? Is it that you don't want the baby?
Look, I am not having a baby.
I see. You've made up your mind to have an abortion, have you? Well, in that case, I can recommend the Jeremy Beadle General. I don't mind telling you that if I was in your position, I wouldn't even consider having an abortion.
I'm not!
That's a sensible chap. I thought you'd listen to my advice. Now, do you want me to book you a place at St. Thomas's?
Doctor, you are a joke.
What?
You are inept, incompetent, you're a disgrace to the medical profession.
Well, at least I haven't got myself pregnant.
I'm getting out of this madhouse.
Yes, well, I don't think he'll be pestering me about his gout again. Is there anyone else to see me, Miss Bickerstaff?
Yes. That American's here again with his cat. He said when you doctored it, you didn't do it properly.
Well, what did he expect? I'm an MD, not a vet. Get rid of him, would you? Good morning. See, you've got your cat with you. I gather my... I gather my surgery on it was unsatisfactory.
Right.
So, what do you want me to do?
I want you to spay it again, Sam.
Pardon?
You heard me. Play it again, Sam.
Oh, sure thing, Rick.
Of all the joints in all the world, I had to end up in this one. I mean, here I am holding a pussycat when the only pussycat I'm interested in holding is the sort that wears fishnet stockings and a dumb expression.
You have been listening to Star Turk 2, starring Christopher Godwin, Jeffrey Holland, Susie Blake, and Fred Harris.
I expect you're all wondering why I've taken my cat to a doctor instead of a vet. Well, the thing is, the only vet I know is Robert Hardy in All Creatures Great and Small. And I don't think I'd be able to stand the overacting.
The show was written by Terry Ravenscroft.
I'm also here to get some background on doctors for a movie I'm writing about a doctor who's kidnapped. And during 2 years of captivity, is forced to eat 10 tons of bricks, 2 tons of wood, 50 square yards of glass, and 600 feet of assorted pipework. It's called House and the Doctor.
And produced by Martin Fisher.
Here's looking at you, Martin.